Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The only debate in Wisconsin's Supreme Court race is delayed, as spending numbers show a distinct advantage for Chris Taylor, and the Marquette Law School poll suggests voters aren't tuning in. All that more on Rewind, your week in review for March 27th.
Hi, I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
Jesse, thanks for filling for Anya while she's out.
Glad to be here.
Now, we first talk about the show. It's going to be all about the debate, the Supreme Court race.
Yes.
We have lots to talk about, thankfully, but the debate has been delayed, so I want to walk through real quick kind of what happened. So we get this note Wednesday afternoon that Chris Taylor can't make it. She's got a medical issue, finally has kidney stones, so we have a couple of quotes from the campaigns. First from Chris Taylor's campaign, we're excited to debate next week and grateful to WISN for working a killer schedule. This is an important opportunity for voters to hear directly from Judge Taylor about why she's the best candidate for a state Supreme Court. Now from Mary Lazar's campaign, we apologize to the voters of Wisconsin that they have to wait until only 5 days for the election to hear directly from candidates to their position on their positions. Now, the 5 days, it's going to be Thursday of next week. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, how does this impact the race? Does it impact it very much in your mind?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I guess who's watching the debate that hasn't already decided? I'm not sure how many people are watching the debate who aren't already interested in the race and therefore probably have started to form some opinions. That being said, I guess we know Chris Taylor is generally ahead, both in spending and what polling we've seen. So conventional wisdom would say this has probably a more negative effect on the Lazar campaign, right, than the Taylor campaign, if there is one.
Well, to your point about people not watching, I get the impression we're always watching for the viral moment, right? So a big mistake, a big gaffe. You can work its way into TV ads or to digital or some kind of social media. So the voting started this week. The voting will be 5 days out, but already like halfway through roughly come Thursday. So there's not much of a window, I guess, to get stuff into social media for Lazar if Taylor makes a gaffe. For a TV ad, it's really tight window to get stuff in. So, yeah, I think my impression is that this is probably better for Chris Taylor. Now, that also prompts a conspiracy theory.
Of course,
that
yes.
This is all fake because Chris Taylor's back at the campaign trail starting tomorrow with stops for a statewide tour. We got a doctor's note, I'm sure she shared with you guys too, that she was on meds. I remember producing the debate on Wednesday, but could be back in the at the job on Sunday with no restrictions, so in a day early. Nonetheless, I mentioned that early voting is already going on, so here's some numbers I want to show everybody at home about what's happening in the state. So remember, you can vote early in person starting Tuesday. Absentee ballots are rolling in. So far, we've had 305,935 ballots requested. These numbers from Milwaukee County, Dane County, and Waukesha County. Now, what I want to tell people is we're always looking for like clues like what these things mean, right? So Milwaukee County, as of today, is 17% and change of the total votes requested. Dane County, a little less 14%, Waukesha County, 10%. Now, why I bring that up is looking at 2025, the final numbers, we got to 750,000 absentee ballots. Milwaukee County was 16%. So Milwaukee County is a little bit bigger share right now. Dane County was 15%, so a little smaller share right now. Waukesha County was 12%. Okay, so we don't have voter registration in Wisconsin. If we're looking for clues, I can't read too much as I don't think right now, but I'm wondering, one, who's voting early? And two, are we going to see a drop-off in the rural areas because those places powered Donald Trump in 2024? Am I off base in wondering those things?
No, I mean, I think the counties that we're looking at are usually good counties for Democrats, Milwaukee and Dane especially, but Waukesha more and more so in recent years. And when you look at the messaging from the two parties on when they want you to vote, both will say at this point early voting, but you hear more conspiracies or doubt about the validity of early voting or absentee voting from Republicans. So, I think it's to what end we can discern anything from this, probably a pretty good look for Chris Taylor.
So looking at turnout, and I don't want to try and project off of the first few days of early voting to like what's going to happen for all of the election, but that $750,000 vote benchmark for early voting in 25, 2.4 million that year, 23, 1.8 million, 2019, 1.2 million, 2018, less than a million. So that also reflects the spending. I counted $115 million in 2025, not counting the $27 million, I think, Elon Musk spent on his online petition. Mm-hmm. I counted $56 million in 2023. Democracy Campaign counted less than $10 million in 2020. So there's yeah. a correlation, right, between the spending and the turnout. Well, I bring that up because this week I went through Ad Impact, which tracks ads, thus the name, and impact expenditure reports. And looking at that, there is a 15-to-1 spending advantage for Chris Taylor. Mm-hmm. Now, I caution right at home, that sounds like a big disparity, but it's not big in dollar figures. Right. So looking at like what Taylor has up on TV, along with groups like A Better Wisconsin Together and its political fund, you know, you get up to like $5.6 million. If you look at what Marie Lazar's got up on TV and her outside spending, you're about $300,000+, so less than $6 million total. What that tells me, though, is that the conservative cavalry has not arrived for Marie Lazar. That spending I'm talking about includes, for example, groups doing doors, setting out mail pieces, dropping the pieces on your door handle, that kind of stuff. All I'm seeing so far on the conservative side is $40,000 from Restoration America PAC mm-hmm. for digital ads, and then the Dane County GOP did a radio/digital buy. There's not anybody doing anything to help. Now, the state party says it is.
Right.
But there's not that infrastructure. I don't know. Jesse, what do those numbers tell you about this race?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I had started to wonder, like, is every race going to just get more and more and more? Are we going to just start blowing out every record every year? So at least we've got a little bit of a reset this year. There is that. You know, the spending, again, you know, you can't necessarily tie it directly, but the spending, once again, is looking to be in, certainly in Chris Taylor's favor. Anecdotally, I see more Chris Taylor ads, but I don't know. I mean, I live in Madison, so maybe I'm, you know, in a particular target demographic. But, it's just, you're just not seeing a lot.
I keep hearing the word back to normal. I talked to mm-hmm. sources about this campaign that, you know, 25 and 20 are aberrations in a way because they're about control of the court, or this one is not. It's about got a 4-3 liberal majority, then you go to 5-2 or stay at 4-3. So maybe it's just there's less impetus to spend.
Yeah, stakes maybe, are not as high.
Maybe it's that conservatives went, okay, we outspent the liberals last time, still lost by 10 points. I don't spend money on the governor's race this fall. Well, to be determined. But either way, there's not much of an effort financially out there right now. It has made my life easier, not going to lie. The spreadsheet's not
that,
taxing. But speaking about numbers, we've got new Marquette Law School mm-hmm. poll results. And so we'll run these numbers real quick and talk about kind of like how we view them. So just first, looking at registered voters. We've got two different universes here. Registered voters overall, 20% for Chris Taylor, 17% for Marie Lazar, 53% undecided. Mm-hmm. Among likely voters, all right, 30% for Chris Taylor, 22% Marie Lazar, 46% undecided. Now, last month is basically about 2/3 of voters undecided. Looking at these numbers, Jesse, what do you make of them? Is there something you really kind of pull out of what this race is at?
Everything that we've said, I think, already is just this adds to that, right? Maybe a lot of people aren't paying attention, like you said, with the spending. I mean, the stakes are not the same as those last two. It's not being thrown at everyone's faces. And I'm sure voters are happy about that. You know, that last Supreme Court race was exhausting for everyone, even people who didn't pay attention to politics. But no, I mean, I think this reflects what we've talked about in terms of spending, in terms of activity, and then we see it in the poll. You know, I think you and I will talk about this more in terms of the poll, but when we're looking at that universe of registered voters in the Marquette poll right now, I'm not sure how much that tells us about this actual race just because of the turnout in comparison.
To your point, you know, as people look at the Marquette poll, Marquette poll is great. It's a gold standard in Wisconsin for fall elections.
Yeah.
But it's a different electorate, right? So that's why I keep hearing from people of, so if you start with registered, so this poll took registered voters overall and then asked, are you going to vote in April? Most people are going to lie about, you know, being sloughing off their democratic responsibility, right? Small d democratic, by the way, to turn out and vote in our democracy. So I've heard people say if you're like a better poll, you start with a file of people who turn out in April every year, like, or not every, but most years. That would give you a better universe. That said, there are a couple numbers in this poll that I think people really took attention or paid attention to. Mm-hmm. One, of everybody polled overall, 66%, so they're will absolutely vote on April 7th. That's 77% for Democrats and 59% for Republicans. 38% of voters overall say they're enthusiastic about voting this spring. 51% of Democrats, 32% of Republicans. Mm-hmm. 51% overall say the outcome race is very important to them. 65% of them Democrats saying that, 46% Republicans. What picture am I painting at this point, do you think, Jesse?
Another advantage for Democrats. We've got a theme going here. Yeah.
And I don't want to diminish that there is a path for Lazar, but we're not seeing money.
Right.
We're not seeing enthusiasm. We're not seeing the ad buys. It's a tough road for her to hoe. But here, we do have Charles Fagan talking about the poll results and these numbers we've talked about with enthusiasm. We'll listen to him right now and get his take on what's going on in this poll.
If in this last 2 weeks Republicans mobilize and raise their turnout from that 59% estimate up to something closer to where the Democrats are, then that could naturally narrow the race. Across all three measures of engagement, involvement in the race, Democrats have a consistent advantage over those. And that could, I talked earlier about how Republicans could make up some of the gap. This is where Democrats could potentially expand the gap if people who are less engaged in the election in a less visible campaign turn out less, and we actually see turnout rates go down this year, then the Democratic advantage in involvement, intensity, enthusiasm could boost their margin in 2 weeks.
All right, Jesse, so more numbers from Marquette. This one, the governor's race. And so looking at the GOP primary, Tom Tiffany, 40%, Andy Manske, 6%, undecided, 54%. Last month, Tiffany's at 35%, Manske at 2%. The Democratic primary, we have Francesca Hong at 14%, Mandela Barnes at 11%, David Crowley and Sarah Reese at 3% each, and nobody else cracks 3%. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of curious, Jesse, your take. So Charles Franklin said this race, quote, just isn't developing. He doesn't think it's going to change in the coming weeks. What do you see in these numbers?
Well, I think there's still a lot of people who are not paying attention. And I think if you look at the Republican poll, that's where you see that. I mean, none of these people are necessarily looking for another candidate. They're just not paying attention enough to know necessarily that Tom Tiffany is their candidate. So, you know, 54% of people undecided. I don't know that there's 54% of voters who are like, who else is going to get in, right? So then when we look at the Democratic side of things, you know, Francesca Hong is pretty actively campaigning. I think we see her out and about a lot, so not super surprised to see that. Mandela Barnes has a lot of name ID from his previous campaigns. Not surprised to see that. I guess what I'm wondering is, when are we going to start seeing Democrats get more aggressive? Mm-hmm. Are we going to see anyone get on TV? Are we going to see, you know, with Sarah Rodriguez, we've heard tell of a lot of money potentially coming in. Is that going to happen? And are we going to see these candidates start to go after each other a little bit more?
Yeah, because the only thing I think we've both covered, when Sarah Rodriguez kind of said that it was a big mistake for Crowley, mm-hmm. for Milwaukee to allow the insurance plan to lapse, that's the only real dig that I've seen so far. And to your point, I've seen zero spending. There was one group that did like this very small digital buy for Sarah Rodriguez that I'm kind of wondering if it's like a test run for the mm-hmm. Democratic Governors Association, mm-hmm. which they say you're going to do $2 million in ads for her expenditures, so maybe it's coming. But I'm trying to game out in my head. So we have Supreme Court race April 7th. Do you spend before that, right? Because people are barely paying attention to the Supreme Court race. Are you also thinking about your budget? So the primary is August 11th, and I was taught a rule of thumb a long time ago that you figure out what your budget is, and you count backward from the election and go, okay, I can afford this many weeks of TV mm-hmm. or digital, whatever your ad buy is going to be. And so you wait till that date to pull a trigger. But can you wait that long? Because these guys aren't known. Now, the other thing I want to talk about with the Marquette poll is, again, not trying to pick it apart, but you got to kind of keep in mind this is a general audience of voters asking about an August race where nobody spent any money. Right? So name ID might be a big driving factor. And then two, the Democrats who are really plugged in, again, if you want to do like a really true like Democrat primary poll, I start with regular August voters, find out which of the other Democrats and maybe sample those. Again, not to kind of pick it apart, but that's just a reality of kind of like people whose livelihoods depend on getting polls right for primaries, kind of like approach it that way.
Right.
So what I'm wondering is, if you really dive down into like other polling, would you find a different result?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, Mandela Barnes was supposed to be a force to reckon with in this primary, where he would wipe everybody out. He was going to be the biggest fundraiser, the biggest name, had his name ID. Mm-hmm. We see in here he does have the highest name ID.
Yeah.
but Democrats aren't gravitating toward them.
Yep.
Why? That's one of my big questions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you have any, I don't have the answer to that just yet. Do you have any guesses about why they're not gravitating toward him so far?
No, other than I think what we heard, you know, before he got in the race, I think you and I both reported on people behind the scenes, not necessarily anyone that wanted to put their name on it, saying we don't think he should get in because of the Senate race. And that can go two ways. One, you could say, well, he came really close to beating Ron Johnson. That was a strong race. Or you could say he didn't beat him and he should have. So, you know, I think there's still probably some concern from Democrats wondering, you know, should we try someone new as opposed to going with, you know, someone who had their shot.
Yeah. Now, if I'm Crowley Rodriguez, I'm not real happy where my number is. Mm. I've got to get my name ID up there. But if I'm Kelda Royce, I ran statewide once before in a primary.
Yeah.
I've run for Congress. Now, granted, that was in 2012.
Right.
I'm kind of going, dude, this is not great.
Yeah.
Missy Hughes, Joel Brennan, how they build their name ID up.
Right.
Brennan had this week out like his kind of health plan. Mm-hmm. We saw David Crowley release his first 30 days in office. Mm-hmm. They're putting stuff out there.
They are, and Hughes is too. She's put out some policy things too.
So we've seen that, but it's not breaking the general
voter
because you and I are reading about it.
Yes.
We know about it. But let's be honest, our
reach
is limited.
Our stories.
Everybody reads our stuff, let's be honest. But it's limited some ways in breaking through the average person. I'm not sure they're on social media picking stuff up. Now, I know there are a couple of forums in April coming up.
Yeah.
Things should ramp up at some point. My question is with Hong. Everybody I talk to says, great campaign so far, engaging, social media, definitely got a presence with the progressive wing of the party, but is this like a boomlet?
Right.
Is it sustainable?
Right.
Does she have a ceiling? Like, where is that? And for Barnes, we talk about lanes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She is in Mandela Barnes' lane, the progressive wing, right?
Yeah.
So I see Francesca Hong, Mandela Barnes, Kelda Royce, all in that more progressive wing, right?
Definitely.
Francesca, Kelda in the Madison lane. I see David and Mandela in the Milwaukee lane. Sarah's kind of like the suburban lane.
Yeah.
Business sense, Joel Brennan and Missy Hughes. What lane's going to break free?
Yeah.
And is enough room in that lane, Madison, progressive, for both Hong and Mandela to survive? Also, June 1st. That's my big date. That's a polling deadline.
Yep.
So we're not going to have a financial report until middle of July.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to show me how much they've raised until after you have to file your petitions. What I'm bringing that up is, a couple people tell me this week, well, if you're somebody who's like at 3% or 2% or 0%, do you want to risk your kind of political future on like, I got 5% in the primary or 4%? Does that dissuade you from keeping in because you say, hey, I have to go spend more time with my family or I've got this going on. Maybe you find a way out, a graceful exit and say, I don't do this anymore because I know how it's going to end. And then two, as fractured as it is, the more you're likely to get a Francesca Hong or a Mandela Barnes, get to 20% and win the primary, right? So really watching that. We're on the polling kick here. Let's talk about some other numbers. TIPP, another polling firm. Interesting enough, paid for by a conservative group that I think this person behind is a former spokesperson for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're polling in Wisconsin's governor's race, so let's talk about it. Well, I bring it up because in that survey, 40% for Barnes, 38% for Tiffany, likely voters 43-41 for Barnes, registered voters for Crowley 39-38 over Tiffany, likely voters 42-41 for Crowley. Rodriguez, registered voters 40% for her, 39% for Tiffany, likely 44-41. And Francesca Hong, 40% registered for Tiffany, 37% for Hong, likely voters 43-40 for Tiffany. Now, that tells me that, and again, this is a poll in March, all right?
Right.
No money's been spent.
Right.
But there might be an issue where you can be strong in the primary, but not great in the general. Am I off base in bringing that up?
No, I think that is one of the bigger questions for a more progressive candidate, is that's, you know, going to look good in the primary, but do some of those policies that align more with, I mean, Francesca Hong being a Democratic Socialist, do those policies that can win you a primary help or hurt you in the general? I think it's a question that voters are certainly asking. I don't know the answer to it. You know, is this an odd year or is it one where you think, oh, you know, you should go to the middle more when you get to that general? I don't know.
Excellent question. And I'm wondering how can Francesca Hong parlay these poll numbers into money? That's
another good question.
Lifeblood of politics.
Yeah.
And when does spending begin? Like we said, is it going to be mid-May, mid-June? Because you got to make that calculation backwards from August 11th. How soon can you start? Moving on to non-political stuff, talk about the Capitol. There are three ways to get a bill sent to you as your governor of Wisconsin. Number one, there's an automatic trigger every so often. That is next Thursday, April 2nd. Two, you can call for it. And three, lobbyists can send it to you. Each way triggers a window of 6 days, not counting Sunday, which I love in politics. It's
yes.
7 days, you and I, a week. That said, governors signed this week the food shares bill, which is a rare compromise
yes.
bill in the Capitol. We want to show on the screen real quick what Republicans got. They got a directive for the Department of Health Services to seek a waiver to allow a ban on using food stamps to buy candy and soda. The governor got, well, his administration, about $73 million additional state money, more positions at DHS to largely ensure the state doesn't meet this, lose federal aid for the program. There's a new cutoff in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that mm-hmm. if you exceed the 6% error rate for your food stamps rolls, you lose money.
Mm-hmm.
It's also more administrative costs for the state, so that's funded. So we've got that taken care of. We've seen other bills kind of come together. One big one we're watching, Jesse, you wrote about this week, some lobbying on this one, the online gaming bill. It doesn't allow online gaming. It opens
right.
a door to it, right? So
right.
if this bill is signed, the governor can negotiate new compacts with the tribes because online gaming would fit the definition of a bet with state law.
Right.
Wrote this letter. Tell me about this letter that was sent mid-March, I think, to like the Senate and the governor.
Yeah, it was the day before the Senate voted, I think, on the bill. This letter went from 8 of the 11 federally recognized tribes in the state asking the Senate to pass a bill, which, as we saw, that needed Democrats to get it across the finish line, and asking the governor to sign it into law. As you and I know, he doesn't have that bill yet. Based on that trigger, it wasn't one that he called for. And we don't know what he's going to do. Early on, it sounded like he was pretty open to it, saying, if this has the backing of the tribes, I'll do it. I guess the question at this point is, how many tribes do you need to back it? You've got a majority, but you know, where are those three who didn't sign on? Of those three, I know the Oneida Nation said that they're neutral, so not sure you know where that goes on the scale. And then we're not really hearing much from the other two, at least publicly we're not. So.
Yeah. Like, is there a rule of 11 for tribes in Wisconsin, like the rule of 17
right,
in the Senate?
Right.
Well, let's go to the stock report, talk about what's happening this week, that stuff. So first, we have rising gas prices. So touching this quickly, they're up by about more than a buck, compared to a month ago. The reason I bring this up is, where is that going to be come
yeah.
Memorial Day, July 4th, and Labor Day? That's what I'm kind of wondering, because gas prices aren't the end-all be-all in terms of like inflation and cost for people, but it's a psychological thing, right?
Definitely.
You see, every time you drive by a gas, you see the price.
Mm-hmm.
When you fill up, you feel it. So what I've been told by people is, at some point, voters have to feel better about themselves economically, like their situation,
yeah.
to be more open to Republicans this fall, because Trump's in the White House. Like,
yeah.
it's his party, right? So if these don't moderate, you've got an issue. Well, we've got what's going on in Iran right now. My colleague talked to an expert on gas prices, talked about, look, a couple things going on. One, that happened,
mm-hmm.
and the strait being closed off. But two, we're getting close to summer. Summer
True.
Peaks demand.
Yeah.
So if you expect a quick drop after when, if, whatever word you want to use,
yeah.
Iran is resolved, it probably won't be a dramatic drop because you have the demand kicking in.
Yeah.
So it could be months before we see things moderate. Also brought up that the last time we saw a spike like this, actually wasn't as dramatic, was 2022 when Russia invaded Ukraine.
Sure.
That took a couple of years for things to moderate, the market to take care of. So when you watch there, like, where do you rate gas prices and the whole, like, pecking order of issues for people?
I mean, it's tough. I mean, you and I were talking, like, some of it depends on how much you drive, right? So, you know, for me personally, I live in Madison. I walk a lot of places, but living in a suburb or another town where you got to use your car to get places more frequently, you're noticing it a lot. And, you do still notice it when you go past one. So, you know, that grocery prices, I was just buying eggs the other day and I was like, oh, eggs are cheaper, you know? So there's this whole mix of things that maybe you don't even notice them right away, but over time you are looking at, you know, what outgoing expenses did I have and what is that cutting into in my life?
Yeah. So mix this week is the Rainy Day Fund. There's a new study out from Pew about states in general, where they're at. So, hey, good news is Wisconsin, record high rainy day fund, almost at the end of fiscal 25, almost $2 billion. Way better than we were 25 years ago. There actually was almost nothing in the fund back in 2001. There was a trigger put in the budget that year, 0103, which I know means I've been here forever. I know these things. But that every time you have a surplus beyond expected revenues, you put half of it into the fund, up into a certain trigger. So, been doing that. Well, it's great news. We are below the national median for states in terms of how many days of spending we can cover if things go south. So that's something to keep in mind. Two, update the rainy day fund. As of today, we're at $2.04 billion. Now, that thing draws $6 million a month in interest just sitting there. So wish I had that in my bank account.
No kidding.
And finally, I want to talk to you about Donald Trump. So Marquette poll again, looking at the numbers. It's one thing that is unpopular, okay? We've seen a lot.
Right.
Now we're getting a record low net negative for job approval. So we're at negative 14. It was negative 10 last month. It was 7. It was 3. So we're 7, 5, and 3, I think, going back to the beginning of his term. Always been underwater.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're at minus 14. What I'm wondering is this the floor? Again, Iran, gas prices, right, everything else. Or is this the trend where it's going to keep getting worse? I'm curious your take about this. Do you think Tom Tiffany, if he's the nominee for Republicans, can win in this environment as he's here today with what's going on with Donald Trump?
It's really tough, I think. Look, the thing about Donald Trump is if he's on the ballot, it's usually pretty good for Republicans. If he's not, we just haven't seen him have any sort of beneficial effect. And if he's in office and things are not going well and he's unpopular, it's a pretty big drag. And I think, you know, Republicans will tell you that. Robin Voss said it at a West Politics event not too long ago. He said that's the biggest challenge for Republicans in November.
So people aren't happy about inflation, about Iran. They are not feeling good about things that gas prices. Mm-hmm. So do they feel better by Memorial Day, Labor Day, July 4th, or not at all? Because if you don't have people feeling better, you can't tell them things are going better. Joe Biden learned that lesson the hard way in 23 when he's still running for president, saying basically, things are going well. People are like, no, they're not. I don't feel good, right? So for Trump, he keeps saying he solved affordability. The Iran war is over. It's fake news, back and forth. So if things stay as they are, to that Tiffany point, he's got a couple of choices, right? One of them is make your opponent as unlikable as possible.
Yeah.
Now, that's tough to do when you don't know who's going to be until August. So he's on social media. Yes, he's attacking Mandela Barnes, mm-hmm. Sarah Rodriguez, Francesca Hahn.
Definitely.
Smart. But you can't really build a case against them in the public eye until you know who it is. Now, if Republicans are smart, you would think the state GOP or the RGA, Public Government Association, is building up this war chest up so that once they have a nominee, they can go attack him or her
day
after the primary. But how do you make that case now? And then two, can Donald Trump find the message discipline he has lacked severely?
Yeah.
I know I'm being a little flippant about this, but let's be honest. I mean, he bounces around a lot. And Republicans will tell you it's hard to like make a case of things are getting better when he jumps from one thing to next. What first he went to Venezuela and took out that whole thing, great stuff. Went to Iran, not going so well.
Right.
Talked about I may take Cuba next. Like it seems like he has a little bit of attention deficit disorder as a world leader for like where his things or focus is. And if you don't have that focus on affordability, which is the number one issue in the Marquette poll, that's not great. So this also, tie it back to the Supreme Court race.
Yes.
If you think about the environment right now, so Trump's an all-time low. There's not an infrastructure right now that we see for Murillo Lazar.
Right.
Democrats are motivated and unhappy about Donald Trump. It all paints a not pretty picture for the April 7th turnout in Wisconsin for Murillo Lazar. Now, that means you can't win? No. But I have yet to find anybody who's made an argument to me credibly that, besides your campaign, that she's got a path to victory, right? That there's a very challenging environment, challenging financially, everything else that makes it feel like Chris Taylor in the driver's seat, which is amazing. You think about Chris Taylor was a state lawmaker for a decade.
Yeah.
There is a deep record there to pick apart for ads. And we've seen a little bit of that so far. The state party's done some stuff. Lazar's done some stuff. New ad this week talking about transgender athletes and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't seen a real prosecution of the Taylor record or that she was policy director of Planned Parenthood.
Right.
If you want to excite anti-abortion voters, you would like bring that up ad nauseum. We haven't seen that. It tells me there's just not that enthusiasm appetite to go prosecute it. And the question is why.
It is a different candidate environment than it would have been for the Supreme Court.
Yes. Well, that is it for this week, March 27th. Thanks for watching. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
We'll see you next week. Thanks for watching.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.